Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green on WYSL 1040, 92.1 FM. And it is a lovely day outside. Hope you enjoy the sunshine and balmy weather this weekend compared to what's coming. And we're going to have cooler weather this week, back to 40s and 50s. But this weekend, some nice warm weather. I hope you get some seeds in the ground and start putting in some transplants. It is probably, well, at least for the city of Rochester, likely that we are not going to have another frost at this point, but it's close. And in the long-term forecast, we have 4 days of, or 4 nights of 35 degrees as a low. And so that means if we lose, you know, the forecast is off, which it always is off some, we could get a frost. And that's why things like tomatoes are still kind of risky to put in the ground if you're not willing to cover them. And you can put a 5 gallon bucket over them at night. You can cover them in a bunch of different ways. The bucket may be better than a blanket or, you know, old sheet or a piece of plastic, because it's not going to maybe get heavy with dew like a sheet would, and break down your little tomato plants. But the things that I seeded, the cool weather crops, they're not going to mind these temperatures. They could take a minor frost probably. Well, they did last week. And so it's way too early to plant basil. Tomatoes, again, likely you'll have to cover them. And it's a, you just don't know with this. 35 degrees. If you're south of Rochester, away from the Finger Lakes or Lake Ontario, you're probably looking at something closer to 32. So beware, depending on what you put in the ground, and maybe hold off a week on the tomatoes. Again, it just may just started. Our frost-free date is usually May 15th, and so we're on schedule. We're just not able to put the tomatoes in early. I often check the Avon forecast, which tends to be cooler than Rochester. And it shows 2 nights of 33 degrees coming up this week and a couple nights of 35. So very close to frosts those nights. And it always seems, at least I live near the airport, whatever the forecast for the airport, we tend to be a couple degrees colder than that. So beware. But again, if you're buying plants at a nursery that have been hardened off, that means that they've been outside at night, they're used to the temperatures over the last week, then they might be just fine this week without having to be covered. But cool weather things, I've been planting violas and pansies, and they are they're very happy right now. They're doing well. So they prefer this cool weather, blooming like crazy. And then in my garden, I've got spinach up, the seeds. I've got some lettuce, some kale, some Swiss chard, some peas, some beets, some carrots. Those started growing. So all of these kind of growing from seed in the garden, and it's not too late to put those seeds in. We got a few questions about specific plants that maybe you've already put in the ground and you're wondering how they're going to do. Email me, michael@saverlife.com. These plants are tougher than we think. I went over to check out the lupin that a neighbor had planted a few weeks ago, and like 5 days after they planted it, it was 24 degrees. Those lupins should have been dead. So they weren't. They're fine. I don't know why. Maybe they've been possibly hardened off a little bit. Maybe they covered them at night. I didn't know. Didn't see my neighbor covering them. But it's really just not worth the risk. You know, if you go and buy the plants and put in the work of planting them, it's kind of devastating if they take a big hit. Again, maybe try a few, and if you're not willing to cover them, they die. You're not losing the whole batch of them that you put in. So beware. We're that tricky time of the year, really be careful over the next 2 weeks, and then we'll be off and running, and you can plant pretty much anything in the ground. But basil and tomatoes, two of the most tender of the things that people often put in the ground, and patience too. Those and begonias, not very tough. So again, email me if you have questions, michael@saverlife.com. And you should visit the website. We have launched a new website thanks to help from a great friend of mine, Chris Clemens of exploringupstate.com, a blog about all kinds of things, all kinds of places that he's visited. It's some recent visits to Montezuma National Wildlife Refuge and some... he's also up at Sterling Nature Center. But not just, you know, sort of the natural beauty of our area. He also covers some of the museums, the interesting people who collect odd things, whether it's traffic lights. I think it was a guy in Utica that he interviewed that collects traffic lights and, like, has them all hanging in his basement. I'm pretty sure that this guy does not collect them, you know, just by taking them off the street. You know, these are older traffic lights. There was some place in the Adirondacks that was all antlers, just a crazy number of antlers. So some funny stories, some stories about the religious history of our region, tons of different posts you can read about, delve into at exploringupstate.com. And this week, as the weather cools off again, maybe a good time to do some of that exploring and kind of create a list of places you want to go visit in the near future. It's lots to explore there. The phone number here, 585-346-3000, 585-346-3000. And if you have a plant you can't identify, send me a couple photos of it. Hopefully I can figure it out for you. And I'm trying to get better at identifying the things that are coming up in the garden that are volunteers that I want or weeds that I don't want. And because I have a bunch of sunflowers that self-sow each year, and if I can catch them early enough, they're easier to transplant because I don't want them shading my entire garden. But I'm not that good yet at figuring out with the first preliminary leaves that don't look like the main leaves of pretty much any plant. I'm not good at identifying some of these things early enough. Oh, and it'll be easier to transplant. So most of what's coming up, I planted in rows so I can tell that I intentionally planted it. And most of the other little seedlings and things that are coming up probably are weeds I need to kind of rake out of there. But again, those sunflowers and a few other things that just kind of show up in the garden that I want to move out. I have to wait a little while to figure out exactly what is what. I know I had back when I was doing lawn care, I had a landscape client who loved wildflowers, and I would come and fertilize the lawn, but also did some slice seeding of it, which is a machine that cuts into the ground and helps to get the seed into the soil rather than just sitting on top of the ground. And so it disturbs it and kind of breaks up the surface. And so she would go through and try to get any of the wildflowers that might have been growing in the yard out and into the woods and into her gardens before I came with a slice seeder and potentially damaged them. She was collecting wildflowers that were in her lawn. And we weren't applying any herbicides, but she didn't want this machine to chew them up, this slice seeding machine. So you never know where interesting plants might seed themselves, and you know, you got to let them grow a little bit maybe to figure out what they are. Someone who would know exactly what they are is Todd Lighthouse from Lighthouse Gardens, and he's with us this morning. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning, Michael. Thanks for reaching out this morning.
Absolutely. The sunshine is great. Your greenhouses will be warming up a lot today, right?
Oh, they most certainly will. The sun definitely gets people thinking about gardening and getting them in the mood to support their soil.
So it's going to be like 60 out today, but in your greenhouses, if you don't open the vents and things and turn the fans on, it would probably be well over 80, wouldn't it?
Oh, it'd be well over 100 if we didn't have the ability to open things up. Even in the middle of winter, we can get pretty close to 100 degrees on a sunny day without any heating at all.
Wow.
So today we're definitely opening things up. As a matter of fact, today is really the first, like, truly warm sunny day that we will have to undo some of the fastening on the side so we can roll up some of the greenhouses to kind of to keep our plants cool today so that they don't get too stretchy.
So a lot of people know you from the farmers markets, the Brighton Farmers Market, the Rochester Public Market. Maybe they've been down to Hunaway Falls where your greenhouses are. So first, give us a quick backdrop of when you started Lighthouse Gardens, kind of
sure.
In the history of it.
Yeah, so, well, I didn't grow up in the horticultural industry. I don't have any entrepreneurs in my family or anything like that. I've just always had a deep passion for plants, from an ethnobotanical perspective, studying the relationship between plants and humans and how we use plants and how plants have helped us adapt and evolve. And I've just always been fascinated with it and took that course of study through college, but kind of got sidetracked when I was asked by a professor of mine to intern at his family's wholesale greenhouse business in northern New York. And really, the rest is history. That was back in 1997. And I've been in the green industry in one facet or another ever since. I've done research with Cornell University at their agricultural experimental station. I was a greenhouse manager in Denver for a while, was a greenhouse grower for the Garden Factory for years, and several other garden centers and stuff like that. So I started Lighthouse Gardens in 2006, built our first greenhouse in the winter of 06, 07, and then immediately started selling at farmers markets. I first started selling organically grown perennials because nobody was really doing that at the time. But once I started vending at the farmers market, it became abundantly clear that people really wanted edible plants. They wanted their herbs and veggie plants grown organically, and there really wasn't anybody doing that at the time. So we started growing what people wanted, and we've evolved greatly since then, and now we offer over 500 varieties of organic herbs and veggies, and now we grow a lot of succulents and still doing some perennials, but mostly shade-loving perennials. So as you mentioned, we sell our goods at the Rochester Public Market, although we're taking the season off from there for due to the pandemic, but we still sell at the Brighton Farmers Market, which is slated to open on the 24th of May. And we do a lot of wholesaling, too. We've been doing more and more of that as our brand has become pretty recognizable in the Rochester area. So now we have several garden centers that carry some of our plants, like the Garden Factory, Bristol's Garden Center, Abundance Food Co-op, Lori's Natural Foods and Van Putty's out in Greece as well. They all carry our plants. So even though we're not at the public market this season, people can find our plants at all those places as well as our own farm store in Lima.
And it's a Lima address. I think I said Honeyway Falls, but
where I started my first greenhouse is in Honeyway Falls. It's literally a greenhouse in my backyard, or I should say, my backyard is a greenhouse. And then I bought property in Lima about 7 years ago, and that's where we've expanded. We've got seven greenhouses up in various stages of completion. I couldn't build any more greenhouses in my backyard. So, yeah, even though they're only like a mile away, these two locations, but one is in Honeyway Falls and the other one is in Lima. But our Lima location is where we do our sales out of.
And the Brighton Farmers Market this year is going to be on a pre-order basis, right?
Yeah, so, you know,
at least to
Brighton,
start.
I think we're in our 11th year now, the Brighton Farmers Market. And in many ways, that market has set the standard, I feel, for quality and, really service to the community. And that's no different this year. I'm on the board of the Brighton Farmers Market and was one of the founding members. And we decided this year we cannot allow shopping as some markets are allowing. We are setting things up out of an abundance of caution to maintain the health and safety of the farmers and the community at large. So we decided this year to eliminate shopping and have it set up so it's strictly a pre-order pickup scenario in order to keep everyone safe. And this is the big struggle for us because, you know, farmers markets, there's such a, it's a community building environment, and it's frustrating that aspect of the market is going to be removed this year, but it's for the health and safety of the community that we've made the decision. So all of the vendors this year that have decided to continue to vend are now having to set up online stores so that their customers can reach out to us and place orders, and they'll be able to pick them up there. And we're still working out the details of how that works because obviously we don't want everybody to show up at once. We're still figuring out how this is going to work out. But so far, that's the plan for the Brighton market.
And approximately when might that start, do you think?
So I just received word a couple days ago. You know, typically our opening day is Mother's Day. We're pushing that back a couple weeks this year, probably to give vendors enough time to set up their systems. And, you know, obviously most vendors will have more stuff as the season rolls on. So right now the tentative opening date is the 24th. I really don't see that changing, but anything can happen. Especially this season. So, yeah, right now we're slated to open the 24th.
All right. Well, last year, maybe for several years, you've carried ginger, which I got from you and grew, and it's a tropical plant that we don't see very often, but grows really well. And will you have some more this year?
Unfortunately, I won't. I missed the ordering deadline for the ginger. So virtually all of the ginger that you find that certified organic farmers have to offer come from one single source in Hawaii. This guy goes by the name of the Biker Dude. And
excellent.
So ginger has become so popular, especially in the Northeast, because we've figured out ways to grow it in protective structures like high tunnels. And you're right, the past 2 years I've offered it for sale in pots. And I don't necessarily harvest it for sale myself. I'd like to sell it as a plant so people can grow it themselves. And we had great success with it last year, but the ginger supplier, the Biker Dude in Hawaii, he sold out super fast this year. His offering was actually decreased due to I think his farm was affected by the lava in Hawaii, so his yield was substantially less than it usually is. So he sold out super fast, and I was unable to get some for this season. But we're on his list to get more for next year. We're not going to give up on that crop, because it's a lot of fun. But, yeah,
that
his stuff
is
fantastic. And like I said, if you find other farmers that have it, it really all comes from this one guy. And when we get our rhizomes from him, they're already 5 years old. He starts everything from tissue culture, and it takes 5 years to get it to the point where he can sell it as a rhizome to his customers. So, yeah, we're hoping to get some more next year.
You don't usually hear that. You know, my farm was overrun by lava.
I know. It's a pretty, times are weird right now. I guess it doesn't sound all that weird anymore, but, yeah, his farm was overrun by lava and affected his crop, unfortunately.
Wow. Todd Howe, Lighthouse is with us, and you have transplants this time of the year, but then you also have some great tomatoes. Your carrots last year were just unbelievable. So you know, they just looked so lush there at the market. So those will be along later, but when do you have some of your earlier edible crops?
So we're pivoting a little bit this year, like most farms. We're having to adapt to these current circumstances, and the desire from our customers to get fresh produce this year is just out of this world. We've had so many people reach out to us, and incidentally, we started a CSA, customer supported agriculture share program for our farm, and we decided to do that this year, add that option this year, even before this pandemic hit. And fortunately we did, because the response has been unbelievable. People that want to secure fresh vegetables for themselves all season long. So we usually aim to have fresh veggies ready by mid-June. This year, we're just about to complete building a high tunnel where we'll be able to get some stuff even earlier. So we expect to have some fresh veggies, hopefully within 4 weeks. I know a lot of my farmer friends are already starting to harvest good local stuff, and all that stuff will be available through those farmers, including myself at the Brighton Farmers Market, but some of them are already starting to harvest right now. So I expect to have stuff in about a month or so. We're already starting to see our first cherry tomatoes, believe it or not. We had specialized in the past, I'd say about 5 years or so, have grown a series of dwarf tomato plants in patio containers. And these plants only get about 18 to 20 inches tall. And believe it or not, these varieties are indeterminate. Even though they stay short, they continue to produce flowers all season long. So we do a huge crop of these, and we always intend on selling the plants. But if we don't, we get an abundant early harvest of cherry tomatoes. And we've always had our first crop of cherry tomatoes right around Memorial Day, and I expect this year to be the same. So, yeah, we're typically the first to market with cherry tomatoes. And that's one crop I have really longer than anything else, is cherry tomatoes from Memorial Day all the way till Thanksgiving.
Well, I mean, it is just May 2nd today. It's very early in the season. So
yeah.
The idea that those are only a few weeks away is great.
It is amazing. I'm looking forward to my first tomato. It's a long 6 months without a fresh tomato.
And can people get transplants and things at your Lima store now?
Yeah, they can. So the way we're handling it this year, we're typically open, much like any other garden center, for shopping. But this year we've decided to drive all of our transactions through our online store so that customers can come pick them up and schedule a non-contact pickup date and time of their choosing. So, yeah, unfortunately, we're not open for typical shopping, which is sad. I'd love to have customers come into our production greenhouses and choose straight from the crop, right where it's grown. But unfortunately, I just don't think we can do that in a safe manner this year. But all of our plants are available through our online store. I've been building that out over the past few weeks pretty extensively, and I've added, I don't know, maybe 200-something varieties right now are up there, and I'm adding more as they become available. So, yeah, right now we have a whole bunch of things available. We've got our first round of tomato transplants are ready, and we have tons of greens, six-packs of lettuces, chard, kale, all that kind of stuff. So we've got a lot of stuff ready right now and available for sale right now.
Well, I picked up your Swiss chard from Abundance about a week ago, and that's in the ground starting to grow, and that won't care about cool temperatures. So it's a great. I can never plant enough Swiss chard.
I know that. Likewise, that's my favorite vegetable, Swiss chard, especially the colorful rainbow variety that we like to grow. And this is something that's always fascinated me, and I'm seeing a lot more of. I've always been interested in bridging the gap between edible and ornamental plants, and I don't think they need to be in their separate gardens. I've always encourage people to grow their edible plants along with their flowers. There's no reason why they need to be separate. And, you know, the Swiss chard that you brought up is just stunningly beautiful. And the rainbow of intense colors on those stems and leaves, it really stands out in the garden. And it tastes awesome, too.
The leaves are kind of glossy. And then I was at a restaurant in Cape Cod last year, and they had a single stem of Swiss chard in a vase on each table.
That was that's awesome.
You know, mainly for the color of the stem, and so
yeah,
and they were huge. It looked cool. But yeah. If someone talks about edible landscaping, the Swiss chard is the first thing that comes to mind. And then maybe the dinosaur kale also looks pretty cool in gardens.
Yeah, I was also going to mention that. The kale now, you know, kale has been the in vogue vegetable for a few years now. And the breeding that has come out of that demand is really amazing. All of the really neat varieties out there right now. There's some that are rainbow-colored unto their own now, but more in the shades of greens and purples and even blue. Truly amazing stuff, and the saboid leaves and deeply cut leaves, just really amazing crop. That would be my second go-to crop for edible ornamental landscaping. And they can handle, you know, even a deep freeze sometimes. They last well into the winter, even as an edible ornamental plant.
Yeah, we're harvesting some of ours in January, February before it.
Yeah.
The snow kind of knocked it down more than anything.
And then the leaves, after those frosts, the leaves just get sweeter and sweeter with each passing frost on those.
Well, let's not talk about the frosts of fall yet. Just entering spring right now, and Todd, do you release things like ladybugs and other insects to help in the greenhouses?
We do. I typically don't use ladybugs. Sometimes I do. It depends on what kind of pest we're dealing with. The strategy that we take is multidimensional. We scout for insects daily. I check on the crops as I'm watering them. And we start with a program in the middle of the winter. Once we start, you know, because I'm certified organic, there's a lot of plants that I have to overwinter so that I can propagate them by cutting. And so we keep a lot of stock plants over the winter. And then as we start to warm things up, usually right after Christmas, I'll start bringing in beneficial insects, depending on what kind of pest I'm dealing with. Ladybugs are great. They they really devour everything. And, you know, if I have a big pest outbreak, I will bring in ladybugs because they'll make quick work of cleaning up the greenhouse. The only issue with ladybugs is that they'll eat the good guys, too, if they're hungry enough. So because we use, I tend to use specialist insects or beneficial organisms to target specific, you know, pests that we have in the greenhouse. So I bring in cucumerus mites, which are really microscopic mites that eat the larvae of thrips, which is, besides aphids, the most common greenhouse pest. So they're a pretty targeted beneficial organism. And then we bring in green lacewing larvae. They go after thrips larvae as well. They're more of a generalist, but they typically don't go after the good guys as much. And then I also bring in Aphida beetles. They're also known as rove beetles, really tiny, tiny beetles. And they eat the larvae of soil-dwelling organisms. So we bring in a whole bunch of different things. And then we also spray, but not in the spray in the conventional sense. I spray beneficial organisms, usually in the form of fungal spores that you spray over the crop or drench into the soil, depending on the microbe that you're using and the greenhouse pest that you're targeting. There's a few varieties. One of them, so what they'll do is when you spray these organisms, and really they're soil-dwelling fungal organisms or bacterium, depending on the product that you're using. And when you spray the leaves, this fungus or bacterium will inhabit the foliage and really prevent pathogenic organisms from affecting your crop. So another thing that we use, I just got this fungal spore last week that we'll be drenching into our crops. And what that does is inhabit the roots of the plants and prevents the pests from attacking the roots. So there's all kinds of different things that we use, but we tend to stick towards the specialist organisms that target the things that we want to go after. It's really kind of like conducting a symphony. Really, even just being a grower or a farmer is like conducting a symphony. All these different inputs that affect your crop, and while you don't have total control of how things go, especially in an organic setting, you kind of just make sure everything is just right and the plants are happy. But yeah, we've been using beneficial organisms for quite a long time now, and they work fantastic. Matter of fact, where I used to grow at the garden factory, when I used to grow for them, they, you know, like every other garden center, you know, sprayed chemicals, even though soft chemicals, ones that aren't all that harmful. Since then, they have completely switched over to beneficial organisms with zero reliance on sprays. So, you know, it's not just the organic farmers now that are using these things. They're proven to work and really be more effective in many ways in dealing with greenhouse pests. And, of course, it's much safer for everybody, including the customers.
So in the years that you've had the greenhouses, has the availability of these organisms and things increased a lot?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a little bit. They've really always been there. I'd say for at least the past 20 years. I would say that they've increased in popularity. So the availability has always been there, but their popularity has increased. And I think the research around using them has increased a lot. You know, I kind of straddle the greenhouse world and the organic farming world. And in the greenhouse world, they've adopted these things for a long time. And at the organic conferences that I attend, there's more and more discussion of using beneficial organisms and high tunnels and stuff like that. So, yeah, I guess yes and no. Like, they have been available for a while, but their popularity has certainly increased because I think a lot of growers are seeing that they really do work. and they're easy to use, and they're safe.
I've used beneficial nematodes for probably 20 years, maybe longer actually, spraying them on lawns for grubs and black vine weevil and a bunch of other things that they attack. And they there's non-beneficial nematodes, but these beneficial ones are pretty amazing. They're very tough, but you can't just go out and apply them every day. Like a day like today, not a good day to apply them because of the sun. They don't tolerate the sun well. But if you go out and treat all of your lawns in the rain, they're going to love it. You have to change your schedule. You have to change the way you're doing things, and it's probably the same for you. As you're applying these things, it's not, you know, like April 15th, you apply your beetles. You're scouting. You're watching the temperatures. It's a more nuanced way of treating insects or diseases.
Oh, well, it certainly is. Even for conventional sprays, you can do that per schedule. But even that requires grower input, because timing is critical in all of these things. But you're absolutely right. The application of beneficial organisms is more of a, it's definitely timed just right, and the crop has to be in a certain phase of its growth, and you actually have to schedule the purchase of these, 7 to 10 days in advance, or you can actually set up a schedule with the beneficial insect providers so that you receive weekly or biweekly shipments. And really, these things are most effectively applied before you even know you have an issue. It's very hard to use these after an issue has presented itself, because it's hard to catch up. And, unlike an effective chemical spray that might knock a greenhouse pest population down pretty quickly, beneficial insects take time to build up. You know, they can only eat so many pests in a day. So application, the timing of application is critical in the life cycle of the crop. But as you suggest, even the environment, you can't really release these things on a day like today, because the sun is just too much for them. And you have to, for some of these, you have to water the crop before you apply them, because these insects are going to want some water too. So it takes a bit more of a nuanced approach when using these. And what's difficult with these things is that the feedback of their efficacy isn't presented readily. You know, it's kind of a long-term approach. You kind of almost have to have faith in the fact that they work, because you're not going to see that they're working, you know, for at least a week after you apply them, with the exception of ladybugs. If you have an aphid problem and bring in ladybugs, you'll see the effect of those within a day. if I had an aphid breakout in my greenhouse, I'll bring in ladybugs, and it's amazing to watch them make quick work of it. Last year I had some aphids on our first succession of pepper plants, and I brought in some ladybugs, and really within 24 hours, there wasn't an aphid to be found in the entire greenhouse. It was truly amazing. But
then they flew away, right?
Yeah, they don't. They need food, and if there's no longer any pests in their greenhouse for them to eat, if it's not real easy for them to find it, they'll leave.
Yeah. Well, Todd, for people who are placing orders, it's lighthouse-gardens.com, right?
Yeah, yep. We've got our online store there. I'm adding varieties daily. There's a lot of items, a lot of varieties on there that stay sold out, but that's only because we haven't added them for sale yet. All of our varieties are based on live inventory that I take once a week, really just to make sure that I don't oversell a crop. So you know, even though if it says it's sold out online, it just means it's not ready yet. But we'll have hundreds and hundreds of varieties up there. And as the other things become ready, we'll be adding our succulents and our hostas. And I just added some fig plants yesterday. So we'll have lots of new things up there for sale.
All right. And again, the CSA, you've titled it a salad CSA, which it's different, a different kind of CSA, but geared more to what you grow.
Yeah, it's a little bit, it's a different take on the CSA. I've always been attracted to the CSA model of connecting with our customers, and we've had so many requests over the years to start one. And so we decided to do that this year, but I wanted to do it a little bit differently because I like to grow the things that I eat the most of. And so those things tend to be salad crops. So we're focusing our CSA on the type of crop that people eat the most of, and those tend to be salads. So like lettuces, could be mixed greens, spinach, arugula, and then things you put in salads, cucumbers, cherry tomatoes, slicing tomatoes, kale, and really just all kinds of salad crops. And that, those are the things that we grow really well and we have specialized in over the years. And the response that we've gotten has been really amazing. The customers that have bought into our CSA so far really like the model, and because I feel like it's more accessible to them. And I want to say, I'm not certain, but most of our CSA shareholders are people that have never belonged to a CSA before, which really was the goal of mine, to make the CSA accessible and convenient for people so that we can start incorporating them into the local food movement and sourcing their fresh vegetables locally. And I didn't want to have a CSA model that turns people off, you know, by having vegetables that are less popular in things that they might not want in a share. I don't want anybody to ever get a share and look at it and be like, well, what do I do with this? Everything they get in our share, they're going to know what to do with.
Do you still have shares available?
Yeah. We haven't maxed out yet. I'm really not setting a limit on that. As long as I have space in our farm to grow, we're going to continue to accept members. Like most farms, we're pivoting more towards vegetable production this year. And, I don't anticipate closing that out unless shares start selling a lot. But one thing that's fascinating that I've noticed selling these shares since we started in January is that 90% of our shareholders are hyper-local customers. So these are people in my town that... And I don't know if you know this, but we don't sell our vegetables locally. I don't have a vegetable stand at my farm because traditionally we bring all of our vegetables to the Brighton Farmers Market and sell them there. But nearly all of our shareholders are people in Lima and Honeyway Falls, and I'm super excited to be able to feed my community this year.
Yeah. Not very many miles that their food is coming from.
Right.
Each week. Well, Todd, thank you. It's your busiest season now. I appreciate your time this morning as you rush to get, there's not enough hours in the day for a greenhouse, especially right now, and farmers in general. So thank you for your time.
Michael, thank you for reaching out. I appreciate the conversation, and I look forward to seeing you at the market.
You will. Thank you, Todd.
All right. Take care, Michael.
Bye-bye. That's Todd Lighthouse, lighthouse-gardens.com, and you may have run into him at the Brighton Farmers Market. And as he said, they're not doing the Rochester Public Market this year, but the Brighton Market is likely to open toward the near the end of May with the pre-order and pay online, so it will be a pickup at the Brighton Market. So a different model this year, and that might change as the year goes by. It depends how things go, but that's how they're planning to open later in May. We will take a quick break, Be back after a word from our sponsors here on WYSL 1040.
She likes sweets. They're easy to grow. They are easy to grow. Easy to grow in the morning dew. She likes sweets. They're easy to grow. And they always are there, everywhere when she needs a few.
Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here with the sponsors of Naturally Green, without which I wouldn't be able to do this radio show. Let them know that you listen. And Sarah's Garden Center was our original sponsor back in 1994 for the gardening show. And they are an amazing nursery doing curbside service in Brockport, 389 East Avenue in Brockport. It's sarahsgardencenter.com. Follow them on Facebook. You'll see some pretty amazing photos from their gardens as the spring goes by. And they have stunning plants, always bringing in unusual things, and also do containers for you. If you want to bring them a container, they can fill that, get it planted for you. And you know, if you're just not sure how to put plants together, Kathy Kepler and her staff are especially good at that, and you can have a pretty spectacular container. Obviously, they sell containers too, but if you have one that you like to use, you can bring it out there and have them fill it for you. It's sarahsgardencenter.com. Also brought to you by The Birdhouse, and they've been doing, like many places, more things online, video and classes and things. And this coming Tuesday, their Tea and Tweets will be live talking about some of those migrating birds like the grosbeaks and Baltimore Orioles and hummingbirds and things that are just starting to come back to our area. And while they're doing it live, you can send in questions. But also, of course, the video is available afterward, too. It's thebirdhouseny.com. Follow them on Facebook for those videos, and they're doing curb service. You order in advance, they'll bring it out for you. And maybe you want to add a birdhouse, maybe a bird bath for the season. It's an ideal time of the year to do that. It's thebirdhouseny.com. Again, follow them on Facebook as well. The Bergen Water Gardens is in Western New York, not open for retail hours yet, but they are shipping lotus and tropical water lilies and carnivorous plants, and they're shipping them not only around our area, Finger Lakes, Western New York, but not just around the United States. They're actually shipping some overseas. They have a pretty amazing collection of lotus, and they've gotten to know some of the key growers. And so they get in varieties that are not available in other parts of the country or other parts of the world. It's right here in our area between Bergen and Churchville on Buffalo Road. It's bergenwatergardens.com. And finally, brought to you by Gallia's Tropical Greenhouse and Florist. They're in Pittsford, the corner of Jefferson and Clover. Again, gallias.com. Stop in and see them. They have curb service for cut flowers, for plants, obviously for Mother's Day next week. They'll have a lot of cool plants that you can get. Go to gallias.com and get more information. And you know, the big green eggs, they've been carried for many years for grilling. Those are really pretty amazing grill. It's ceramics that insulate, so you use less charcoal, and they are amazingly easy to operate. Kind of a cult following for the big green eggs. Gallias.com, it's G-A-L-L-E-A-S, the corner of Jefferson and Clover, right around the corner from the birdhouse. So right near each other. That's Gallias.com. When you call and visit our sponsors, tell them you heard about it here on Naturally Green.
¶¶
Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green on WISL 1040, 92.1 FM. And a couple things. One, we're talking with Todd Lighthouse about beneficial insects and looking for pests. And I've been battling these sawflies on a rose bush. One specific rose bush that a friend of mine has. And these sawflies, I usually, in the past, would catch them as the caterpillars and sawflies. There are many different kinds of sawflies, and I initially saw them on these mugo pines, which is an evergreen shrub, not used as much anymore because they get scale and these sawflies, and the sawflies that attack that mugo pine would lay their eggs, and then there'd be just tons of these caterpillars, and there'd basically be one per needle. And they were green, so they kind of looked like the needles. But when you walked by the shrub, it would move as all of these caterpillars would kind of, go into defensive mode or something. They're little tiny caterpillars, but not that much different in size than the needles that they were eating. But there were so many of them that it had this effect of the shrub moving, which is bizarre. And kind of a little scary, actually. Difficult to go and squish all those little tiny caterpillars, so you could blow them off with a hose, which is probably the most effective way. But with this rose, it's another kind of sawfly, I think, because insects like that, there are hundreds or maybe thousands of varieties. And this one lays eggs on the rose bush, and then it seems like each caterpillar takes a leaf and they'll defoliate the shrub. And so I've gotten smarter. I look earlier in the season, and now I'm trying to kill the sawflies, the adult ones, which are not, I mean, they fly, but they're not that they're not that easily spooked. So you can actually squish them on the leaf, hopefully before they've laid eggs. And so I got maybe 10 of them last time. I got to go check again today, and hopefully I'll have fewer of these sawfly caterpillars because I'm killing the adults. And of course, you could use a systemic pesticide, an insecticide. It would kill these sawfly larvae when they eat the leaves, but I don't use those things. And in this case, my friend actually harvests the flowers to make a rose petal jelly, which is this amazing color. And so you especially don't want to use insecticide, and systemic is taken up through the root system into the plant versus just being sprayed on the plant. You really don't want to use things like that when you're going to eat the plant. So I'm manually going out and killing the sawflies themselves, and then I'll look for, because invariably some of them will lay eggs, I'll look for the caterpillars, in another couple of weeks as the leaves come out even more. So scouting is the key, and as Todd Lighthouse was saying, he's as he's watering his plants in the greenhouse, he's looking for pests. You kind of keep your eyes open, and if you see something, email me a photo if you can catch it or describe it. And if you can tell me what you saw it on, there's a decent chance I can figure out what it is, even without a photo, because pests tend to be specific to plants and to certain plants. Not all of them, but luckily most of them are fairly specific. And so, again, it's just a matter of scouting, observation. In many cases, it may be an insect that's not going to cause any harm at all. And yet people are, they see a bug on a plant and maybe they see a hole in the leaf. Well, that bug didn't necessarily make that hole. And we are generally doing a lot of spraying of trying to kill pests that is unnecessary or after the fact. If you see holes in the leaf and you spray the plant, there's a good chance that pest is gone and you've maybe killed some beneficial insects accidentally, but you haven't killed the one that made the holes in the leaves because its life cycle is done. So you learn about the life cycle of these insects, and it's kind of fascinating, actually. I mean, it's learning about Mother Nature. You understand more about what you're seeing out there and whether you need to worry about it. And pretty soon the red buds will start blooming. Those are beautiful. There's a lot of them in Genesee Valley Park. And they have a heart-shaped leaf. And in the summer, you'll start to see pieces etched out of these heart-shaped leaves, almost incised with a scalpel, a very smooth cut. It's a leafcutter bee. It's not going to hurt the red bud. It's going to be just fine. And it's, you know, another example of knowing what's happening. You don't worry about it then, that it's going to damage the plant. You know, it's the leafcutter bee that loves the red buds. Maybe it has easier leaves to cut. Maybe it likes the heart shape. Who knows? But really, it's very specific and very easy to tell, even though you don't see the bee actually doing the cutting. So email me photos of things if you want help identifying. Michael@saverlife.com. We'll take a quick break. Be back afterwards from our sponsors on WYSL 1040.
Wildwood flower grew wild on the farm, and we never knowed what it was called. Some said it's a flower, and some said it's a weed. I didn't give it much thought.
Michael Warren Thomas here with the sponsors of Naturally Green. I buy the time from the station and get my own sponsors. So these are places that are independent businesses, and I'm an independent broadcaster. Those include the Arbor Barber. Steve and Emily Lighty can help you with pruning, thinning, removal of trees. If you want more sunlight, if the weed trees have gotten too big, if the branches are near your roof, you want to get those away so that you don't get moss and moisture on that roof. It's sometimes these trees just get away from us before we realize it. Get a free quote from them. It's Arbor Barber, 289-4117, 289-4117. Also brought to you by Broccolo Tree and Lawn Care. Their nursery on 441 is open, and they can deliver mulch and things for your landscape projects. Maybe a little less grass this year, a little more gardens. Maybe add some more flower gardens, cutting gardens, vegetable gardens. Broccolo can design and install them or just deliver the materials to you. It's broccolotreeandlawn.com. And again, their nursery on 441, just east of Turkhill Road and Route 250. Also brought to you by Wisteria Flowers and Gifts on Culver Road near University. They are doing deliveries and you know, send someone a bright bouquet. Maybe someone doesn't have spring flowers in their gardens, or maybe they live in an apartment. Send them a beautiful bouquet from Wisteria Flowers and Gifts. It's online, wisteriaflowersandgifts.com, to get more details. And finally, brought to you by Palmeter's Nursery, just south of Avon, between Avon and Geneseo on Route 39, one of our premier nurseries in the area. And they have some gorgeous gardens as well. So, look them up online, Palmeter's Nursery, Garden Nursery. It's about half an hour south of Rochester, and one of the really amazing nurseries in terms of plant selection and their gardens. When you call in to visit our sponsors, tell them you heard about it here on Naturally Green. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green on WYSL 1040, 92.1 FM. Enjoy the sunny weather. We'll be back in the next hour with For Love of Food, to talk with Chris Wiedemer of Cook's World, and a bunch of other interviews coming up this morning also, and Discover the Finger Lakes here on WYSL 1040.